Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
Okay, welcome to the ninth edition of the Class Racing Podcast. And this week I have longtime Division III stock racer Tom Russell as my guest host. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our good friend Charlie he's a little bit tied up this week with farm season starting in the Midwest here, work, and trying to get ready for racing. So we grabbed Tom to jump in for him and look forward to get a little different perspective.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I've enjoyed listening to all the podcasts you guys are doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, and for those of you that don't know Tom, I know that Tom's raced in D3 for, well, longer than I have, for sure. And his father, Gary, has been involved in drag racing since, I believe you said 1959, Tom?
Yeah, 59 or 60, right around in there.
Yeah, so a long time. I know he raced in modified, you know, when that was popular, you know, stock. Some super stock, I believe, as well. So.
Yep.
And how old's your dad now?
He's 76. He turned 76 in February, and he's still going strong.
Yeah, so 76 years old, still racing an A-stick stocker, a fast A-stick stocker. And, you know, so I hope that when I'm in my mid-70s, if I can still run a stick car, you know, going the 9-second range, I think I will be really happy. So Tom comes from a long racing family, and he's been involved in racing in a long time. And currently he's, you know, has his own chassis building shop in the Canton, Ohio area. I know you've built, what did you say before the show? I think six, you know, Copo clone factory cars.
Yep, that's correct. Six of them.
So Tom's probably built almost as many as, probably the most of anybody that's not, you know, turnkey that does all the Camaro Copos.
Yeah.
You know, got a lot of experience in the factory stuff. Also, you know, built motors. You've raced in, you know, pretty much every stock limiter class there is. And also run some super stock. So I think you'll have a great perspective on what we do here. Okay, so let's talk about some results first. And I was kind of wishing that Charlie'd be here so I could rub it in a little bit. But he gave me some crap about picking Anthony Bartosi this week or last week on the podcast. But I tell you what, I picked Anthony, and he got it done for me. He was 008, dead four in the final. Over Don Thomas, who was 17 dead two. So, you know, Don Thomas put up under a 200 package in Superstock. And I'm pretty sure if you asked Don before the final, hey, you're going to be 17 dead on, I'm pretty sure he'd take that all day long. But wasn't quite good enough. Anthony is a, you know, I spent a lot of time over the years racing on the IHRA side, you know, before focusing now mostly on the NHRA side. And I tell you what, Anthony was, I believe he's a 17-time IHRA world champion in Superstock modified, and also I think top dragster. But I tell you what, he is tough, and he showed it out in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Anthony's always tough. He's, I think he said that was the 37th final round he's been in.
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive because really, I mean, he's raced in the industry for a while now, but he spent the majority of his career, at least early career, racing almost predominantly on the IHRA side. So that's pretty impressive to be in 37 finals, and I believe that was his 22nd win. Most of them coming in Superstock.
Yeah, that's extremely impressive.
Now in Stock Eliminator, we actually had a very interesting final, all heads up, E-Stock Automatic final. And we had Justin Jerome over Ryan Mangus. And I believe he's driving the former Justin Lamb 70 Camaro. I believe that's the car that Ryan was driving, which is very fast. And he went, you know, 104 under the index with a 20 light. But it was not good enough. Justin Jerome was 007 on the tree and went 108 under. 1081 is the altitude-adjusted Las Vegas track to take the heads-up final. And I tell you what, I mean, stock eliminator, heads-up in the final, both second plus under. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that.
No, that's a dream come true. I'd love to be in a heads-up final. And those guys both did an excellent job.
Yeah, and both of them hopped their car up quite a bit. I mean, both of them had been in the, you know, solidly in the 11-second zone for most of the event. And, you know, they picked up, you know, 2 to 3 tenths for that final. You know, I don't know exactly what the weather conditions were compared to the other parts of the event. But, man, that's both impressive runs, both great lights, and wish I was there to see it.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, I've seen a lot of heads-up final rounds over the years, but you don't very often see a final round that's heads-up that's that close. So that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of finals are anticlimactic, where, you know, somebody goes red, or, you know, the guys hop their cars up so much that it bogs off the line and one car's 3 or 4 tenths slower than they were before. You know, that I think that almost happens more than a good run.
Yeah, and, you know, I've said for years, I wish NHRA would put stock and super stock on a 5 tenths pro tree just to get rid of most of the red lights. You know, it's like you said, it's so depressing to see red lights in the finals or in a heads-up race.
Yeah, I wonder if they've ever considered doing that. I know there's been some talk on it over the years on, you know, Class Racer and some of the other things. But I don't know. That is interesting. I guess I've never really thought about it. But it would definitely change the dynamic of the sport a little bit.
Yeah, it would get rid of a lot of the red lights. And I don't know if they still do it in Division One when they run top stock, but I know a lot of the top stock racing, they were using a 5 tenths pro tree just for that reason, to get rid of the red lights.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I really like stock and super stock is the bottom bulb aspect. You know, I feel that it does take some skill. It takes a lot more concentration. You know, I know that, you know, I've dabbled in super comp a little bit and drove some other cars and, you know, everybody's usually really good on the tree in super comp because it's easy. Everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's got delay box. Everybody's hitting the tree. But in stock super stock, I mean, I've seen a lot of good racers try to come over and race bottom bulb that were very successful in other disciplines and not do well. So,
Yeah, I believe that. It's definitely tough. I mean, it wouldn't affect somebody like me or you, you know, when you're using a blinder. That's basically what we're doing anyway, but you know, it would be interesting.
Yeah, it would definitely make, you know, blinding at night is obviously darn near impossible, as we've found.
Yeah.
But that would definitely fix that problem.
That would fix it for sure.
So, all right, well, looks like Vegas was a pretty good race. You know, I didn't really see any complaints on the schedule. Looks like the weather was pretty good for the most part. And looks like they got the race off without a hitch. And the other thing that I did see in Vegas, and I'm not sure why this was, but it looks like they kept a few more rounds on Sunday morning, you know, kind of before the pro show. They did run a few rounds of sportsmen, so I'm not sure if they got behind earlier in the weekend or if that was more planned. But, you know, I think it's always pretty cool when, you know, you race more than just the last few cars on Sunday, because if you can get to Sunday, it's a pretty cool feeling. You know, wake up Sunday morning, last day, race day, you know, with all the pros running eliminations. It definitely, you know, I think just turns up the adrenaline, or that turns up the magnitude just a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That's one of my complaints with national events is they try to get rid of all the sportsman cars before Sunday, and you know, it's nice to be out there racing with the pros when the stands are full.
Yeah, for sure. One other thing that I did want to mention is just a little bit outside of the stock and super stock realm, but we had Justin Lamb, who chose not to run his stocker that he's been world champion just in the last 2 years and got runner-up last year. And instead, he jumped in Phil Unruh's longtime Super Stock Racers, Top Sportsman car. And I don't know if you saw any of this, Tom, but that car was going in the mid-650 range at over 220 mile an hour.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. He did pretty well with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, he got down to the semifinals and was 007 on the tree, two over for the loss against a really tough run. He may have been out of it just a little bit, but, you know, Justin is obviously very talented. He's had really good equipment to run over the years. It looks like Phil's car is definitely fits that bill. And going 220 mile an hour at 650, I mean, I know it's a turbocharged entry, and that's quite a bit more mile an hour than it should go for 650. So that has to be a heck of a ride, and very different than a stalker.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Although, like you said, he is so talented. I think you could put him in about any car and he'd be successful.
Yeah, I did see some stuff online, and we'll have to get Justin on here in the next couple of weeks to talk about, you know, some of the great success he's had, and we'll definitely ask him about it. But I did see online that, you know, it's not something he definitely wants to do all the time. He definitely doesn't like going, you know, 220 mile an hour necessarily. But in Las Vegas, his home track, you know, he felt comfortable there and was pretty excited about the opportunity to drive the car. So the other big race we had over the weekend was the Dallas Double Lucas Oil event. And it looks like, you know, I wasn't there, but I did talk to a few people that were there and kind of watched some of the live coverage on Warren Evans' deal. It was plagued by rain off and on all weekend. I know that they had at least 2 days, I think, that were almost a complete washout. And they ended up finishing the second race on Monday. And it even looked like on Monday here at work, I watched a little bit of it throughout the day. That, you know, maybe the track conditions weren't quite ideal. It looked pretty cloudy. So, you know, looked like it had a great turnout, a lot of cars, but, you know, not quite the ideal weather for an event of that magnitude.
Yeah, I didn't see much about the race. I did see that they finished on Monday, which I know is always tough, you know, for everybody trying to get back home, get back to work. But at least they got it through. A double weekend is always tough to get through. You know, in Division III, it would be nearly impossible with the amount of cars we get. But at least they finally got it in.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the idea of a double. I think it, you know, as you know, you've traveled and chased division points before. It's really hard to get to 8 points meets.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you just have one double or two doubles, that were, you know, maybe one double in each division, it would really, really help out from not only a time away from work, time away from home, time away from family, but also travel time and one tow for two races. I mean, back in the IHRA days when, you know, IHRA was strong, they went to almost an all double schedule, and they obviously had a lot less cars, but I tell you what, they were a lot of fun, and it was a really good way to go to a lot of races.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't race IHRA much, but the races I went to, that's one thing I loved about it was the doubles. And I wouldn't have a problem with, like, Division III having a double, even if you had to be there on Thursday to race. You know, it still saved time that you wouldn't have to take off work for the next one, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll tell you, the thing that I like the most about the double is, you know, when I had the opportunity to win a few of the IHRA races back in the day. And if you won the first race, which, you know, concluded on Saturday night.
Yeah.
The coolest thing about that is all of your friends would still be there. Not one person would have left the track.
Yeah.
You know, and many times when you win an IHRA points meet, you know, by the time you win, there's nobody there.
Right.
You know, there's not five trailers in the pits. The only people who are there are the people that won in another class. Or, you know, maybe a few loyal fans, but not many. And it was always really cool to win on Saturday night an IHRA double because everybody would be there, you know, winner's circle, everybody would want to be in your picture, and it was just fun.
Yep, yeah.
And,
you know, the last IHRA race you won was a Saturday night race, I believe, and we were there with you. And
I remember that, Pittsburgh.
In the Firebird with a stick, yep. And then, you know, Norwalk, talking about nobody being there, when I won Norwalk points meet, that's when we got rain and we were there on Monday, and there was absolutely no one there. It's, you know, it's kind of a letdown when all your buddies aren't there with you.
Yeah, so that you know, that's the one thing that I liked about the double the most, which really had little to do with the double, but I thought, you know, really made it pretty cool. And I think, you know, that's probably one of the coolest things about winning an NHRA national event is, well, most of your racing friends aren't there, you know, because they've long gone home since it's, you know, they whittle it right down to the finals. You know, I was fortunate enough to win Norwalk in 2015 in Stock Eliminator. I know you were still there.
Yeah.
But when you turn the corner and come up through the stands and, you know, I don't know how many people Norwalk holds, but let's just call it, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 people, you know, they had it packed, a packed house, and, you know, riding up the return road with all those fans cheering. I mean, that's about as good as it gets as a sportsman racer for that feeling of accomplishment.
Yep.
You know, I think the more ways we can make a points meet like that and make it special to win, I think the better.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that's what I always liked about the Norwalk points meet when they were giving out tickets. I think you and Charlie talked about it a little bit in one of these shows, that it was nice being there in front of a packed crowd. And you know, Division III, some of the races I've seen them pull the winners up in front of the stands and go out and interview everybody. And I just think that stuff's great for the sportsman racers.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right, well, let's jump back to the Dallas Divisional and just kind of quickly go through the race results. We won't get too far into the weeds. Everybody obviously knows how to look up the results, but let's just give praise to the few of the top guys here that had great weekends. Jacob Pitt was solid on the tree all weekend and over Mike Trumbull in the final, who went red. And I believe this is Mike's second final in just as many weeks, you know, kind of back in the stock front. So he's obviously got a great start to the points. In Superstock in race one, it was Elijah Boyd driving his GTE automatic race car he was at 0.17 light and 19 thou under, and won a double breakout over Mike Town, who was 0.10 on the tree and 26 thou under. So if you do the math on that, that was almost a dead heat and a heck of a race there in the final. Both great lights, both just a little bit under the dial. Race number two, perennial favorite, Division IV, Austin Williams in his F-Stock automatic duster over Parker DeVore. And, you know, Austin's obviously been pretty dominant down in Division IV for the last couple of years. I feel like he wins a couple races a year. He's been in the running for the National Points Championship a few times over the last couple of years. And I believe he did win Super Comp a few years ago. So great racer, good family, and had a really good weekend at Dallas. He also got runner-up in race two in Super Comp, so almost pulled off the rare and very challenging Lucas Oil double. And in Superstock, you had David Rampe over Jared Emmons. And I did see this one on the video, and from my vantage point, it looks like Jerry just really spun the tires off of it. I don't know if they got in something or, you know, track conditions just weren't that good. I know their cars are really pretty good usually, but really wasn't much of a race in the final. It looked like Jerry just really blew the tires off of. So I know that Charlie talks to those guys quite a bit. So next week we'll have to find out what happened there. But David Rampe, obviously one of the best sportsman racers and best Superstock drivers in the history of our sport, puts up another win.
Yeah, and that's a shame that he spun the tires. That would have been a heck of a race. Both excellent drivers. I wonder what win that is for Rampe. I know, I believe he's up over 100, isn't he?
So David Rampe, that was his 62nd Lucas Oil race win. And, you know, last year in the fall out west, I believe in Las Vegas, he did win his 100th national event. So 162 wins on the NHRA National and Lucas Oil Tour. Wow. I don't know that I've gone to 162 races in my career. So
yeah,
just to win that many, that's crazy.
That's amazing. It really is when you sit and think about it. He's had an amazing career.
And heck of a nice guy. I know that you know him quite well. And,
yep.
You know, anybody can talk to him at any time, and he'll sit there and talk to you and just as down to earth as anybody. So great guy, great racer.
Yep, super nice guy, and like you say, he would help anybody. He's just a really good guy.
Yeah, for sure. One more thing. I don't know if you saw this, Tom. I know that you're a Comp Eliminator fan as well. But Craig Bergone has just been on a tear this year. I know he won Gainesville. I know he went deep in Houston. And he won both races in Comp Eliminator. I know he was 15 on the tree in the one race. I think he was 00 in the other race. Definitely didn't have the fastest car. Kind of had a mid-pack car both races based on kind of the runs he was making. But tell you what, he was hammering the tree all weekend. You know, he got down the track consistently in that A-Nostalgia Dragster, not always in a straight line. But, man, tearing it up. And, you know, with the bonus, I believe that's – I think it's $10,000 per race bonus. So he picks up a cool extra $20,000 for doubling up at Dallas. And I know that there's also a bonus for the division champ at the end of the year in Comp Eliminator in Division 4, thanks to Roger Brogdon. So, wow, I mean, Craig's definitely looking pretty good for that. And, you know, 20 extra thousand bucks, plus the payout for the points meet with the contingency and everything. You know, I'm sure he walked away with, you know, 25 plus thousand dollars at a points meet. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I love seeing it. You know, those guys that run Comp Eliminator spend huge amounts of money. And it's nice to see him finally get a little bit of a payout.
And I know that was probably one of the first points meets that I can remember in a long time that actually had a full field. They had, I believe, 39 cars in Comp Eliminator at the Dallas Double. And they had, you know, they had numerous cars from, I know they had a couple cars from Division III. I know that a guy from New York even drove down. I think Frank Affronti drove down from New York. So Division I car, obviously some Division II cars and Division IV. I know there were some Division V cars. I saw a guy from Minnesota made the trip down. I don't know how far that is, but it seems like a long way to me. So great turnout. And, you know, it just kind of shows if you put some money into some of these sportsman classes, you know, it will change things. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's great. And, you know, we've talked about Comp Eliminator before. I'd love to run Comp. Can't afford it. But I've been worried the last few years that it was going to disappear. They were going to do away with it. I mean, I was to a couple races here a couple years ago that there was three Comp Eliminator cars, and hopefully somebody will come out and start adding some money to some of the other divisions, some of the other division races.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll keep an eye on that as Comp, I'll call it the big brother of Stock and Superstock. So pretty cool. This weekend, we have the Houston National event, and, you know, since I can't rub it in with Charlie that I won the last one here, we'll let you pick for him, see if you can't get him going a little bit, but pretty low car counts. I think it's just over 30 cars in Superstock entered. I think low 40s in stock. Have you ever been to Houston, Tom?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I've never been to that racetrack. I know that in the past they've had a lot of weather issues. I know that, you know, this time of year I think the weather's a big deal. And I think that – I don't think the sportsman pits are very good. I've seen some complaints in the past, getting parked in the mud, that sort of thing. So I think that's probably definitely driving the car count down. There's also been quite a few races right in a row down there in Division IV, you know, with Nationals and Divisionals. So that may be part of the low car count as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I was to the racetrack in Houston years ago. It must have been maybe the late 90s. Stan Holt actually flew me down, and he rented the track. We were the only car there, and tested him with that Corvette. I don't know if you remember when Stan had the LS1 Corvette.
No, I don't.
It's a pretty nice facility, but I've never been to any of the races down there. You know, it's a long way for us to go.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty, you know, Texas is obviously a huge state, and it's pretty far south in it, so.
Yeah.
Maybe someday. Okay, so, Tom, so I'll put you on the spot here. Who do you want to pick in stock and superstock?
I'm going to pick Jerry Emmons in stock with the old big block 69 Camaro.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good pick. I mean, it seems like at that race and, you know, the race in Dallas, that one of the Emmons always goes deep. You know,
yeah,
Jerry's definitely been super tough in that 69 Camaro, and I think that's a pretty good pick.
Yeah, those guys are dangerous anywhere they go. And in Superstock, I think I must pick Stan Holt in the stick shift Chevy too.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the coolest cars out there. I mean, it any of the, and not just him, but anybody that has a, you know, 66 Chevy 2 with a stick, those cars are just fun to watch. You know, usually leave wheels up, high RPM, and I kind of like those cars, so that's cool.
That's a really good old car. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's Scooter Anderson's old car, and Stan has done a really good job with it, and I don't know if you've ever met Stan. He's one of the nicest people you will ever meet.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let me pick here. Let's see if I can keep my streak going. In stock, I'm going to go with Jeff Lopez in the Copo Camaro. He's been really tough down there, and perennial Division Four guy. I'm going to go with him. And super stock, I'm going to go with Jeff Heffler. I sold my back to the, we were talking about IHRA earlier. My father and I sold our IHRA crate motor Vega that we had to Jeff, and he ran it for a year or two down there in Division Four while IHRA was still strong. And I got to know Jeff a little bit, and he's a heck of a racer. And I think he's driving one of the Emmons' cars. I think that he's been racing a little bit off and on the last year or two. So he's had some struggles. I know they've had some frustrations and problems with the car, and he's had some bad luck, you know, many times when he's ran it. So I think he's ready for some good luck, and I think he'll have a strong showing down there.
Yeah, that's definitely a good pick. Jeff is an excellent driver as well, and I actually ran him in the finals at the All-Star race in, I think, in 2000 or 01, whenever it was. He's always been tough.
What do you have back then? Was that the Buzz Post car?
Yep, that was the Buzz Post Firebird.
Just to touch on real quick, the two other races that are going on this weekend, so make sure you guys definitely check out the results, is there is a points meet at Las Vegas out there, and I know that there was some rain in the schedule for this weekend, so I'm not sure. Hopefully they were able to get that in. And then also we have I'll call it a double event in Atlanta, where they are running the NHRA National Open, the 8th Mile National Open Series, but they're also running the Lucas Oil Divisional Series together in one weekend. So I don't think they did this last year. Well, I think they did it at Rockingham, so I don't think it's a totally new concept, but I think it's, you know, it's a great way for a racer to get two grade points in one weekend and, you know, probably bring some racers to the Open Series that maybe wouldn't necessarily go to the points meet, and it also brings some guys that would normally just kind of run the points meet series to also run the open event since you're already there. So I like the concept. I know that Division II historically doesn't get quite as many cars as some of the other divisions, so I think it makes it a little bit easier for them to do that. But, you know, should be a pretty cool race.
Yeah, I like the double, but I'm not crazy about 8th Mile. And if, you know, for somebody like us to drive all that way, it would have to be a double points meet. I probably wouldn't drive down there for a national open. And, you know, Dad went to Rockingham last fall when they did that. And a lot of the Division III guys that were down there, I think they entered that 8th Mile race, but I don't think many of them stayed and raced it. I think they entered to get the grading point, and that was it.
Yeah, and I think there was some rain last fall in Rockingham, too, wasn't it?
Yeah,
kind of a delayed program.
Yep, there was a little bit. And I'm not sure. I wonder why they run that 8th Mile. And that's not the series that they run that you can run the crate motor cars and stuff in, is it?
I believe it is. I believe it is the series that they run the crate motor cars in.
Okay.
Now, it is a possibility, I guess, they run the open series quarter, but I'm pretty sure it's all 8th.
I think it is. I think it is. It was at Rockingham for sure.
Okay.
So
I'm pretty sure it's all 8th. And I believe they do that because some of the tracks that they go to are not quarter mile. You know, most of the tracks in the Carolinas are 8th mile. You know,
yeah,
just kind of from the.
And
I know they go to Mooresville, and that's definitely 8th mile, and a few others that are 8th mile as well.
Yeah, and I know they did that for some of the IHRA guys, you know, when those races disappeared. At that point, all the IHRA races in Division II were 8th mile. I know that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, towards the end of the IHRA, even up here in D3, a lot of them have moved to 8th Mile too, just because they had lost some of the better tracks.
Yeah.
The bigger facilities had gone to NHRA, and some of them just chose not to have a points meet. So, you know, last couple of years at NHRA, I got the chance to run quite a bit of 8th Mile. And, you know, I like 8th Mile. It's something different. It happens quick. You know, it's a lot more reliant on the tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost
see, I've never been crazy about 8th Mile, but I've been running a stick car so long. And you know, from running the Firebird in a stick car, you're going into high gear right at the 8th Mile. And it's tough to drive the finish line like that.
Yeah, that is the one thing. A stick car is not great for 8th Mile. I mean, you're pulling high gear, you know, right about the mile an hour cone.
Yeah.
Eighth mile race, at least that's about where mine was. And, you know, I would try to short shift it into high gear just to give myself a little bit more time to kind of try to gauge what was going on. But I don't know, just something different. You know, I don't mind it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I haven't done it nearly as much as I used to.
Yeah, I try to stick with quarter mile. We have an 8th mile track about 6 miles from here, and I haven't been there in 2 or 3 years. I'll usually go to Quaker City or Dragway 42 or Norwalk to test.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. Well, I think it's a good series. It gives an opportunity for more, you know, people to participate. It gives those IHRA guys that had crate motor cars and pure stock cars somewhere to race. And, you know, I think anything to help grow this sport is a good thing.
I agree. And, that, you know, it's nice that those guys still have some place they can go race. I can't imagine losing the sanctioning body that, you know, we always raced at and have nowhere to go race the car anymore in points meets or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and Atlanta's a pretty cool place. You know, it's not the nicest track on the circuit anymore, but I think it's got some character. It's a pretty cool place. Yeah, it's a nice layout. Yeah, it's a fun place to race.
Yeah, I used to race in Atlanta all the time. When we lived in Georgia, we were always up there racing, and that was back when they had just redone the track. So I believe NHRA owns that track, don't they?
I believe so. They did it one time. I believe they still do. So yeah. Okay, so we'll talk about the results next week, but should be a good race for them. A couple other things, Tom, I just want to ask you about. Why don't you, I guess, talk a little about how you've become kind of the Copo clone go-to guy. I know that you've built, I believe you got number 6 on the chassis table right now. So I guess why don't you tell us a little about that and kind of what you've been up to.
Yeah, I got into this. Actually, the first car I built was the one that Jeff Atkinson has, and I started building it for Joey Wilkes, is who I built it for originally. And, you know, I had bought a car myself, was going to build one for myself, and I wanted to run a shootout car until, you know, I saw what was going on with the shootout cars and the amount of money it was going to cost. So that car ended up getting sold to Ronnie Troutman. But I've had a lot of help with this stuff with Mike Pastelny. You know, I buy all my parts and everything from him, and we just started doing them, and one thing led to another, and you know, like I say, we've done 6 of them and have a couple more that we have to do.
Yeah. Now, I mean, how different is kind of what you're building compared to, you know, what Turnkey does and what you can buy from General Motors?
Well, they're quite a bit different. I mean, the general suspension and things like that are the same as a factory car. I do the roll cage quite a bit different. You know, I sat in a factory car at Norwalk several years ago, right after they came out, and I was shocked for such a big car how tight it was. You know, you couldn't see out the windshield, and the cage was real tight against you. So when I do them, and the way I do every car, I bend up the cage with a headliner and all the panels and everything in them and keep that stuff as far away from you as possible. I think the loop in the cars I build is like 4 inches wider than a factory car. And I know why they do the factory cars that way. When you put the cage out against everything, it's a lot more work to weld them in. You know, there's not room to get the torch in. And when you're building that many cars, I'm sure they have to get them knocked out. But other than that, the suspension and everything's the same. There's a lot of little things that we do that isn't done on the factory cars. And I try to brace everything up a lot more than the factory cars are. I know guys have had a lot of trouble with them. bending stuff in the rear suspension and tearing brackets out and things like that. So we basically build them just like we would any other race car. And like I say, they're big cars, but as you know, there's not a lot of room in the factory ones. Those cars are, the headliner sticks down away from the roof a bunch because of the factory side airbags and things like that. They're kind of tight inside.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the things that I saw when I, you know, we first, you know, me and my father, you know, Tom, you know, just built us a car here over the winter, and we're finishing putting it together, try to get it together for the next few weeks, hopefully to test it. But when we first started kind of talking about this, I was pretty down on the idea, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, if you sit in some of those factory cars, they, you know, I'm a pretty tall guy, I'm about 6'4", and they're pretty tight, and the windows are pretty small, and you really can't see that great out of them.
Yeah, I was shocked the first one I sat in, and, you know, the windshield bar that goes across the front was right in your line of vision, and the dash is huge in those cars.
Yeah.
So, like I say, it's a little more of a pain to build them the way I do, but it makes a lot nicer car in the end.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that, you know, for example, I believe it was Jim Baburka who we talked to last week, but, you know, somebody, he said that you can't even put your helmet through the side window that's open. You have to open the door because the windows are that small.
Yeah. I believe it. And I said, you know, a lot of the time I'll drive my car up in the trailer and climb out the window. And I don't think you're going to do it in one of those cars.
Well, you can definitely do it. I won't say the gentleman's name by name, but I parked beside a guy at a race last year. And he asked me to come over every time he put the car in or out of the trailer because he was not able to do it himself. But you know, I'm pretty skinny and I feel like I'm in pretty good shape, but, it was about all I could do just to get in and out of the thing. It was definitely not easy.
I'm sure.
But they're awesome cars. And I think Tom definitely did a great job trying to get mine, you know, getting the cage tucked up as much as possible to give, you know, as much visibility as possible and, you know, added protection. So, I think it turned out really good.
Yeah, the only way you're going to get it any farther away than that is not put the factory headliner in it. You know, I don't know if you could get around that, but they're about as far away as possible. And I don't know if you guys have put the headliner back in yours yet or not. It's kind of a pain after I put the cage in it like that. But
well, yeah, it's funny you say that. When we were at the PRI show in December, I was showing Mike Pistone some pictures of the car because at the time you, I think, just hadn't gotten the cage done. And he actually said, you'll never be able to fit the headliner in that. And I was a little worried, you know.
Yeah.
But we did put it in. It took three of us, but I'd say 5-10 minutes. We slid it right in. Had to pull and push on it pretty hard. But, no, it went right in. And, you know, it'll probably be a lot harder to take out. But it's in there now, so we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're tight. But, like I said, it makes it so much nicer. I hate a roll cage that's in the way. You know, I've driven some cars that you have to kind of lean over to the side because the sidebar, your helmet hits the sidebar and things like that. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, so we'll see. I was able to make some passes in the car you built for Ron Troutman last year. And, yeah, it's definitely a different car to drive. They're a big car driving around the pits. Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the, you know, new challenge and to get it figured out, so.
Yeah, and I think those cars are excellent race cars. I mean, you know, I was listening to Jim last week, Jim Baburka, and everybody I talked to says the same thing as him. They drive like a Cadillac, you know, they're quiet inside and they drive nice. So I think they're really good race cars, and I think they're good for the bracket race part of, you know, the races we go to. I think anytime you can run a faster car or you're chasing, I think you have an advantage.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you know, obviously with, you know, allowing the other person to red light first is an advantage. And it's just a lot easier to look out your front windshield than, you know, trying to look back at a car coming after you.
Yep, definitely. Speaking of the red lights, I had a guy asking me about the, I guess, you know, some of the Biondo races or whatever, they have a worst or first or worst red light. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, Peter Biondo and Kyle Seipel, they worked with the guys at CompuLink, and they came up with a thing, I believe, a year or so ago, 2 years ago, of a thing called True Start.
Okay.
And the way it works is, yeah, it's if the first person, you know, go, if you're down 11 flat, I'm down 10 flat, and you go red, your red light does not instantly pop up. It actually turns green. And then as soon as, if I leave and I'm green, then your red bulb comes on and my wind light comes on. So, you know, it's interesting. I personally don't like it. Just from the fact that I think it makes explaining our already hard to explain sport even harder to explain it to a fan or a new racer, right? It adds more complexity. And be honest, I mean, in my selfish way, I have two of the faster cars in the class now with the new Copo, and obviously my super stock slow modified cars is pretty fast as well, going to high 8 seconds. So you know, I like chasing. I like giving the opportunity to get to red light. So, you know, I would rather vote to keep it the other way.
I agree 100%. And, you know, that's what I told the person that was asking me about it. I think, you know, if you want to have the faster car, if you spend the money and have the faster car, I think you should have that advantage as well.
But, you know, to that point, if you know, it's I don't think that, you know, it should be all about money, like many things are.
Right.
So, you know, if I had a P-stock automatic, you know, 305 Camaro or something, I would probably be all for it. So, you know, I don't know. I think many of the local bracket tracks are starting to add this. And I actually raced it somewhere. I had it last year. I raced bracket race once. And what you find is that scenario doesn't happen that often where there's two reds. So it doesn't really affect that many races, and you really don't even notice that it's going on. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's a good idea, especially at bracket races where, you know, a dragster historically has had a lot of advantage.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely gives, you know, the door car guys a little bit of something to help, you know, give them some a little bit of advantage back towards the dragsters. And, you know, I think at the big bracket races at the Million and the Spring Fling, I don't know how well you follow some of that stuff, but in general, door cars have made a big resurgence over the past few years and are very competitive and have won many, many of the big races over the past couple of years.
Yeah, well, I like to see that. But, I it's interesting. It's an interesting topic. I don't know how I'd feel about it with stock and super stock, but like you said, it's already confusing for spectators. I've sat in the stands after I've lost, you know, watching stock and super stock, and it's hard for people to understand that aren't around it all the time.
Right. And I think, you know, like most bracket races really aren't a fan sport. The only people that watch bracket races are people that are involved, right, for the most part. And I think over there, okay, it's fine. It just trues it up. It makes it fair.
Yeah.
I get it. But I think in NHRA, you know, stock and super stock, and the other classes where you're, you know, I wouldn't say stock and super stock is like a huge fan sport, but definitely more than the local bracket race. And I would just be careful not to make it too much more complicated.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think they could help a lot, you know, with stock and super stock. It's like Randy Lynn said when you were talking to her. When all the stock and super stock cars are gone at a national event before all the spectators get there, you know, it's hard to build a fan base.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, you know, I think NHRA has done a good job trying some new things this year. You know, I don't necessarily like all of what they've tried, but they're trying stuff, right? So I would give them some credit for that. So I think, you know, as things change and we try new things over the next year or two, hopefully they can, you know, try some of these other ideas that we've talked about. And, you know, I think, you know, NHRA at the end of the day is a business, right? And if they try something, it helps them, it brings more fans, it gets more interest, and at the end of the day makes them more money, hopefully they'll do the right decision and keep doing that. So,
yep. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, if NHRA, I think they're trying, like you said. And I hear a lot of people down on NHRA, but it's still by far the best game in town. You know, it'd be nice if IHRA was back and they had a little competition, but it is what it is. And I still love the NHRA races, and I think they do a good job in general.
Yeah, for sure. one more thing I want to ask you, Tom. I won't keep you all day here. But I know that you've, you know, been pretty involved in the A-Stick Challenge in the last year or so and really trying to push for that. Why don't you, I guess, tell us a little bit about, you know, why you decided to build a first-gen Camaro. You know, tell us a little bit about the car that you built and, you know, kind of your excitement for the A-Stick Challenge and maybe give us a little teaser of what's going to happen this year in Indy.
Yeah, you know, I grew up watching the A-Stick cars since I was a little kid. I've loved the A-Stick cars. And Jim Schechter actually started the A-Stick Challenge. And I'm not sure. I know it's been 8 or 10 years ago he's been putting this on. And doesn't even run an A-Stick car himself. You know, he does it just because he loves the class. And last year, we did some work and got some money and put up for the winner of the A-Stick Challenge. And I'm not sure what the total was, but I'm pretty sure winning A-Stick last year at Indy paid better than winning the Eliminator. I mean, it was quite a bit of money. And it's this year, I really think we'll end up with $6,000 or $7,000 to win A-Stick. And, you know, which is a big deal. And we're trying to get as many cars there as we possibly can. I think last year we had 8 cars, I believe, and I'd love to see 15 or 20 cars there in A-Stick, you know. And like I said, I've wanted to do it my whole life, and here a year or so ago, we built a big block for Dad's 67 hardtop, and we were standing around, and I said, one of these days I'm going to have a car like this and run A-Stick. Well, he had a 67 Camaro convertible that he bought it when it was almost new. Jim Griffith bought it brand new. And then him and Dad raced it in A-Stick back then, and they ran it modified. And it had been in storage for probably 45 years. So Dad said, well, go get that car and stick it together. It won't take much to build it. And you know how that goes.
Yeah.
It was, you know, complete. I mean, that car had been sitting so long. I replaced everything in it. We had to put a cage in it. But we got it all done and got it running, and I haven't had a chance to run it much. We took it to Bowling Green last year in the U.S. Nationals, and then I went to the Fall Classic at Indy. But it was, you know, it was a struggle getting it done. I started that car up, backed it out of the garage, ran it in the trailer, and took off for Bowling Green. It had never been down the racetrack, which everybody thought I was insane for doing that. But, you know, I knew I couldn't qualify at Indy, or I didn't figure I could. But I wanted to run the A-Stick shootout so bad, I took that car and left the LT1 car at home that I know for sure I could have qualified with. But we had a lot of fun doing it, and it worked out. I mean, the first run on the car in Bowling Green, it ran within like 2 or 3 thousandths of Dad's car that he'd been running for a year with the big block. So it's been a learning curve, but we're getting there.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, and if none of you have, or if some of you have not seen, you know, Tom's car that he put together, I mean, it is really cool. I mean, it's got original paint, right?
Yep, original. It's royal plum purple.
Yep, it's pretty unique. It's got it's a convertible. And is it the original top as well, or did you put a top on?
Yeah. No, it's the original top. It's all original, and it's a rally sport. It's got the Hideaway headlights, and that car, believe it or not, has 2,300 miles on the odometer. It's been a race car since it was brand new. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I had people walking in the shop when I was welding the cage in that car just freaking out, saying, what are you doing? You're ruining this car. But like I said, the thing had been sitting in storage for years. You can't take it and drive it anywhere. Somebody would end up running into it or stealing it. So we put it back on the racetrack where it belongs.
Well, I think, you know, back to Randy Lynn saying that, you know, Stock and Super Stock, some of the best, coolest car show out there.
Yeah.
And I think your car definitely qualifies for that. And, you know, when I say original paint, it doesn't look like it's 45 years old. It looks like it came out of the showroom just recently. So it's definitely a pretty cool car. I know that your nephew made some pretty cool old school looking decals for it. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jamie redid the the decals. The decals that were on the car originally, Dad peeled off and stuck on the window of his garage, the 1973 Class Champion decals. And Jamie redid those and put them on, which I thought was really cool. That car, they won F-Modified production with that in 73 at Indy at the U.S. Nationals. And then they were runner-up in the Eliminator with it. So, and if you would look at pictures from back then, you know, they were way behind. Everything was tubbed with ladder bars and Prager Super Trick wheels. And that thing had chrome reverse steel wheels. And it had some old traction bars with leaf springs. And, you know, but they, Dad and Jim, when they were racing together with it, they spent a weekend with Jerry Stahl. And he helped them with the hood scoop and things like that. And it was, they were kind of ahead of their time with clutches and, you know, the hood scoop and some of the motor stuff. Ron Hutter was helping them with motors. So it was pretty cool.
So, yeah, for sure. Very cool story. What's your plan for this year? Are you planning on being a little bit more competitive at the A-Stick shootout or making any big changes?
Yeah, we're working with the motor program and trying to pick up some horsepower and getting the cars to work. You know, Dad went to Orlando. And in the water, the very first run, he broke a lifter in his motor, which it had a set of Schubeck lifters in it, and it about destroyed the motor. So he drove 1,000 miles back home, and I took the motor out of my car and stuck it in his, and he took off and went back down south. So I got to get a motor built for him so I can get mine back. And I don't know if we'll get that done by Columbus. I'm going to try to. If not, I'll take the LT1 car down there. But yeah, we're going to try to be more competitive this year. I mean, the way his car ran down south, I think we're getting there. And, you know, I've had a lot of help with that stuff. This, we haven't ran big blocks. I mean, Dad ran them when he was young, but these are the first big blocks I've ever dealt with. So I've had a lot of help. Brian Tilberg's helped me out quite a bit. And, you know, there's a lot of good people that you deal with in stock and super stock, which helps out a lot.
For sure. Yeah, I know that, you know, just reading on Facebook and some other things, it looks like there's going to be get even bigger this year. I know there's a couple other guys that are building cars just for A-Stick, both new and old school. So, you know, I think it's one of the favorite things. And it's kind of become a, you know, it's not the Hemi shootout, but it's kind of a little brother to it in stock eliminator, kind of the showcase class. So pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to work with NHRA a little bit. You know, I'd like to see him run all those cars together. You know, last year we kind of got split up when we were running class. If I can get him to run them all together, and I think we're going to try to make sure the winner, maybe the winner and runner-up goes through teardown to make sure everything's legit. But it's tough competing with these old cars, you know, with fuel-injected cars. But like I said, it's what I've always wanted. It would have been a lot cheaper and easier for me to build an LS1 and put in my 98 Camaro, but I've always wanted an old Camaro big block 4-speed car, so that's what we did.
Yeah, for sure. Very cool. And it obviously, car obviously has a lot of sentimental value to you.
Oh yeah.
And that's that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and you know, I still haven't got Dad to drive it. I have pictures of him driving that car in late 67. I tried to get him to come home from Florida and just take that car back with him, but he wouldn't do it, so I'll have to get him in there and get some pictures sometime.
Well, if he's got your motor, I think, you know, maybe you can make this happen, make a little switch here. So I'll have to get on him. But, okay, well, that's cool. It's really good to learn a little bit more about that and learn a little bit more about your car and your family history and kind of where you plan to run the A-Stick Challenge this year. Anything else you want to add as the top host this week on the Class Racing Podcast?
You know, I've been lucky and had a lot of help from a lot of people, Larry and Lisa Buckingham and Penny Rainsburg. And, you know, I got a lot of help here at the shop. I'm just a lucky guy. I get to work on race cars all the time. And, you know, I feel blessed with all this stuff. I kind of do live the dream. So,
yeah, for sure. And, racing and traveling and racing as much as you do, it's, you know, it's very hard to do that alone, and it really takes the team of people at home and understanding family and helping in all sorts of ways. So,
definitely. You know, as well as I do, Aaron, when you're traveling and racing like we do, you got to have a great wife, and some helpful kids, you know, I've said for years, I have more friends throughout the country than I do, you know, within 20 miles of my house. That's one reason I like racing stock so much. It's just such great people that you meet and get to see, and, you know, that's part of the fun.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, thanks for a little short notice jumping on here and being the guest host. I think it was pretty cool to kind of take your perspective on some things. And good luck this season. And I look forward to seeing you probably at the first race at Columbus here in D3.
And yep, if everything goes well, we'll see you there. And like I said, thanks for having me. It's been fun. And hopefully we'll see you at Columbus.
All right, well, sounds great. Good luck getting your motor together for Columbus.
All right, thanks, Aaron.
And that concludes the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Please make sure to like and follow the Facebook page so that you get all of the latest Class Racing Podcast news. Also, make sure to follow us wherever your podcast source is. And lastly, don't forget to tell your friends.